Okay, so today we're going to be talking about client advisory boards with Steve Wershing. Hey, what's up, party people? It's me, Sarah G, with the Smack, and I'm back. I am a CFA charterholder, and I used to be a financial advisor. On this podcast, I provide non-BS-oriented, straight-up views on LinkedIn and other financial advisor marketing topics. You can't get this anywhere else, people. So if that's of value, then please subscribe. And if not, then please leave this podcast right now. Hey, Steve.
Hi, how exciting. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Let's talk about it. What is the purpose of a client advisory board?
The purpose is to understand what it's like to work with you from the other side of the table so that you can identify what's most valuable and how you can improve it.
Why don't advisors just already understand this based on surveys that they do or feedback that their clients tell them directly to their face in their annual reviews?
For a couple of reasons. One is that many advisors don't actually ask. If you work with someone for a long time, you can get an idea of what they respond positively to and what they comment on that was really valuable and those kinds of things, but that's different than asking. So if you go by just the experience of it, you only get a part of the picture, but the other part of it is how you ask is really important. And, asking individuals has value, asking groups has value, and it's different. One of the magical things about focus groups and advisory boards is you can get participants to talk with each other, or they can start being inspired by each other's ideas. So, you know, one of the things you get from a board or something like it is when someone makes a comment and then someone else says, yeah, and you know what else? And it carries on from there. So unless you're getting involved in structured client feedback like this, then you're not getting the full picture.
Okay, now how does one set up, and what is a client advisory board, and how does one set one up?
So the board is a group of your best target clients. And what that means is it's not a sample of the full spectrum of your clients, and it's not just the favorite clients that you have, but it's the idea, if you do it well, if you want to do it so it's as productive as possible, then the board is composed of the clients that you want to clone, the clients who fit the profile of the next person you want to walk in the door to ask to be a client. So that's
most advisors don't even know that.
Well, right, right, exactly. Okay. Well, and not only don't they, even the ones that do, one of the exercises we do in the coaching program that leads up to that first meeting is we talk about what the ideal is, and then I give them a spreadsheet that has all these criteria on it that you know, a lot of which they gave me, and we have them put clients on there, and then we meet again and say, okay, let's go through everybody on this list, and invariably we cut like half the people because, oh, I just really like working with him, or, oh, she's been with me so long, or, you know, so even when they understand it, you know, they look at the list and they say, oh, I really like her. I really want her on the board. So, I mean, you know, that kind of stuff goes on. So first they haven't asked or they don't know. And then the second thing is, even when they know, you still got to go through this editing process, you know, to narrow it down.
Well, I think that sometimes when you have advisors, they've been, so for all of you, by the way, that don't understand about my crazy life, I have 4 children under 7 years old. And one of them is a baby, and she's home with me today. So the baby talk you're hearing in the background isn't like some me. I don't have the TV on, okay?
It's not me. I regress periodically, but not usually that far.
Right. Advisors have such an emotional attitude towards their clients. And, I have clients that I have been with me for the long term, but, you know, I've only been doing this for about 4 or 5 years. You know, when you're talking about that you've had families and, you know, the kids and the grandparents and the whole thing. And, you know, I think a lot of advisors really look at their clients as family. So it's so weird sometimes when you try to talk to them about, but who within that base is ideal that you would really want to replicate? a lot of times I think they feel like they're slighting the person if they don't put them on that list.
Right.
Whereas, you know, and I'd say this over and over again, you know, a niche strategy that's focused on the particular, like either mindset, or it's not actually a mindset of the particular, the target client that you would want, but it's like what you would do for them. You know, if you want to be right. effective going forward, you really have to understand who it is that you're going to work for, like really work out for mm-hmm. in a mechanical way, you know, and that really would be ideally suited to you. And sometimes, you know, you have these clients that you've been working with forever because there's an emotional bond there. Like they like you a lot and they trust you. And it's just, they've gone with that and it'll never change, but they're not the ideal client.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So I'll give you an example. I did an advisory board a couple of weeks ago for a big firm, works with a specific profession, and their ideal, the people that they want to attract, are people who are relatively early in that profession, successful, starting to really gain some momentum in the profession, you know, so that they can be with them for the long term. We put the, you know, we got the board together and we sat down. Now, I was sort of called in to moderate this, so I wasn't involved at the front end. So I sat down and I started asking people, you know, how long have you worked with this firm? And the average answer was like 15 years. Well, so two things. First of all, they're not at that stage of their career anymore. So they're not the ideal, because they were ideal when they came on, but they're not ideal anymore. You know, they're still great clients, but they're not at the stage where the firm wanted to attract them. And the other thing is, that was 15 years ago. You did things very differently 15 years ago. They had different wants 15 years ago. You know, this is a whole different industry 15 years ago. So, you know, you need to have people who, you know, are in a, you know, in a position to be able to say, I remember why I chose you. I remember why I selected you in the first place. And this is what was most valuable as I went through that initial planning process. So, you know, it takes a little bit more than just who are your favorite clients.
All right. So what is a board? What is a client advisory board?
A client advisory board is a facilitated ongoing conversation with your best target clients to, you know, to find out, to deconstruct your process and figure out how you can make it better and make clients more engaged and more loyal and therefore refer more frequently.
How many clients? Sorry, I didn't mean to ask you right when you were drinking.
That's okay. That's okay. And everybody, that I was drinking coffee. I'm not drinking yet. If we're in person, 12 to 14 is ideal. People sitting around, clients sitting around the table, plus an advisor or a couple staff and me. So, you know, altogether, you've got 18 people-ish. Typically.
Well, wait a minute, Steve, how can the advisor be in the room if the client advisory board is going to say the dirt?
Well, because it's important. If this is going to be a relationship building exercise, they need to be in the conversation, but it's why they can't stand at the front of the room. It's why they can't moderate it. But I mean, there are people who disagree with me on this, but I think that the client, that the advisor ought to be sitting there. And there are specific things that a good moderator can do to get the right stuff up on the table. So first of all, nobody in the group hates you. Nobody in the group thinks you provide terrible service or that stuff. They wouldn't have all their money with you if they did. So let's just get that fear off the table, because that's ridiculous. But you can do things in the conversation to get that stuff out there. Once you've get, so I'll set it up for you. You know, we sometimes we'll bait people. We'll bring somebody in who's got something on their mind, and we'll sort of, you know, get them to say something. And I've already instructed the advisor. Okay, when they say this, you don't talk. You just smile and nod. And I say, well, that's really interesting. Tell me more about that. What would be the best outcome from your perspective? How would you most want to see this kind of thing, you know, handled differently or come out? And we go into it a little bit, and then I turn to the advisor and I say, So, Sarah, what do you think? And it doesn't matter what the objection was, because the response is exactly the same. And you all can memorize this, right? You can play this over and over again and memorize it. Here's the response. Wow, I'm really glad you brought that up. I didn't realize how strongly you felt about it. You know, I'm not entirely sure what we can do about it, but I promise when we get back to the office, that's at the top of the agenda.
Oh, but okay. But that does, I mean, is anybody feisty that's your advisor client? Because because you know how it is with the buzzers. Like sure. You tell them, like I tell them all the time. Please. See, it's like when I get animated.
I think she has an opinion about this. I think right. We ought to get her.
Are you surprised? I mean, first of all, doesn't the advisor get a little bit ticked off at you because their clients are sitting there saying stuff and you're like, I understand. That must be so hard. I empathize. Like you're the advisor you're not telling you that they're the ones that didn't send the statements back.
Well, so first of all, I usually don't say I empathize. I say, that's interesting. What about that? What, how did you feel about that? You know, I don't empathize.
Even then, if I were the advisor, I'd be ticked off as heck. I'd be like, how dare you, Steve? You're supposed to be on my side.
Well, here's the thing. Usually it's not something that would make an advisor actually angry. It's just something that they can improve. But let's go with it, right? Let's say something like that. If a client feels that way, if a group of your clients feels that way, wouldn't you rather know?
A lot of advisors wouldn't want to know, but like me personally, I guess I write.
It's affecting the relationship. It's on their minds when they meet with the advisor. So, you know, most advisors, once they reflect on it, they would say, no, you know what? On balance, I'd rather know so I could do something about it. And we handle that. And that's why I told them exactly what to say. I don't know what we can do about that. But when we get back to the office, it's at the top of the agenda. Because after the meeting, when I do the debriefing later, we talk that through.
Who keeps a list? Do you keep a track of all of this on a list? Do you record this session?
Yeah, we record it. We record it, transcribe it, take it apart. With the whole thing is documented so that we can, and we use that a lot because we don't want just my or any other scribe's impression of what someone said. We want to know what they actually said. And so, yeah, we record all these and go back to them. But and every once in a while it happens. Every once in a while it happens, right? So I'll tell you one, and I probably let this go about one question or two a little too far, but the clients were, and it wasn't a criticism. The clients would say, oh, we should do this, we should do that. You know, we can, you know, and they were doing stuff that really was not gonna work. There were a whole bunch of reasons why it wasn't gonna work. And part of it was compliance, and you could see the principal. The partner who was the compliance officer sitting there and getting hotter and hotter and hotter. Like I said, I probably should have stopped at a question or two before that. But we get to one point and he said, what you people have to understand. And I said, okay, well, no more feedback on that topic. Let's move on. So, you know, it's really important. In fact, I've been called into firms where they were doing it themselves and somebody objected to something or complained about something. And the advisor got defensive. That's the worst possible thing that can happen, because then it gets into an argument, at least a disagreement, and it spins out of control. Now we were able to get that one back on, and we had a whole bunch of successful board meetings after that. But that's one of the reasons you have a moderator, is to keep the advisor in check, to make sure. You know, there have been times when I usually sit at the table and talk, but in the days when I used to stand up and facilitate, there were times when I'd walk around behind an advisor and put my hand on their shoulder. And that was the signal to, let's move on. You can stop talking now. So, but you know, as long as you've got a good moderator, you don't have bad outcomes like that, because moderators are good at that.
Hold on, Steve. So, but doesn't the advisor say, how can I ask 12 of my clients to take time out of their life? I would feel like I owe them so much. They're so busy. Like this is what happens whenever I ask my like advisors. I'm like, you should go to your clients and ask them this or that.
Yeah.
Or ask your clients to like an update of yours on LinkedIn. And they're like, oh, I can't ask that. It's too much.
Right. Well, the big fear I get is, I have very successful, very busy clients. They could never take the time. And it's not true. I've done boards full of physicians. I've done boards full of Fortune 100 executives. I've done advisory boards. I did advisory boards with a firm who had high net worth clients in Greenwich, Connecticut, which, if you don't know, is the highest rent zip code in the country.
I know. I live in New York City.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Oh, I know
so
that
you
fact.
Know you yeah. So well, in fact, you know, I was getting set. Well, never mind. I won't go there. But we senior partners of major law firms. I mean, we've got heavy hitters at some of these meetings. If you give people an opportunity to say, we'd like your input on what we do so that we can do it better for you, they're in. They'll buy in. We rarely have any difficulty getting people to come to these meetings. The other favorite objection I get all the time is, our clients want our relationship to be confidential. They would never ever, you know, like expose themselves to, you know, to anybody else as our client. And, you know, to that I usually respond, you ever have a client appreciation event? And they're like, oh yeah. Yeah. See, you know, the clients, and one of the things we discovered is, if you're really good at focusing on a particular market or a particular kind of client, and we get them together, they end up liking each other because they're really similar. And boards, it's fun because boards develop a culture after a while. And part of the reason they want to come back to the meetings is they probably don't see those other people very often, and they really like those folks, and they like getting together with them and
it
having dinner.
Networking, so. Especially if it's a particular industry niche.
Yeah.
No, I hear you. Like, I have webinars for people on my membership. My social media like training program, I have them twice a month. And I love it when my advisors are like friends now. And like, I see them on social media, like helping each other and stuff. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
But wait, hold on, Steve. So they do this, like, it's not just a one-time thing. Like, they have to come back like jury duty or something.
Well, we try not to make it too much like a courtroom. Yeah, so typically a firm will do two or three of these a year. So it's not a big commitment. It's, you know, once every 4 to 6 months. And but we also have a very specific way of setting it up at the beginning. So at the beginning, we don't tell people it's an ongoing thing because they don't really know what to expect. And what we do is we set it up so that we say, we just want to get you together and get some honest and candid feedback and buy you dinner. And then at the end of that meeting, you know, I throw it out there. And I say, well, boy, we've learned an awful lot tonight. And I don't want to speak for Sarah here because, you know, but I'm going to recommend to her that we do this again because you've given us some stuff to think about. I'm not sure that a once and done would really do it. So you don't have to tell us anything tonight, but she'll follow up later. And, you know, I think that this has been a big help and I could see this really being valuable moving forward. And practically everybody wants to come back 6 months later to do it again. So once we get into the cycle, then I say,
is it a dinner event or is it during the day?
It depends
Stop
on the client base.
Stop jarring on the couch.
Oh, sorry about that. I thought I could doodle here. it depends on the client base. Sometimes we do it over lunch. We've occasionally done it over breakfast. Most of them happen to be over dinner. Sometimes it's, you know, it's not a specific over a specific meal, but that's just what's most common.
You do this over Zoom?
I can. Yeah, I do virtual and in person. So we did mostly in person. I'd done a couple of Zoom meetings before the pandemic, and then during the pandemic, we did all virtual, and now we're back to one or the other. So Zoom ones can work too.
Do the clients who aren't on the board get jealous of the ones that were chosen to be on the board?
I haven't seen it. Advisors have raised that as a concern. I could see it happening. I've never heard of it. However, here's what we do. So like I said, after we do a couple of meetings, we start rotating membership. And so what I say to advisors is, if somebody says to you, hey, why aren't I on that board? You can say, you interested? Because we're going to be, you know, graduating a couple of clients, you know, in another meeting or two, we'd be happy to talk about bringing you in at that point. So you can gradually.
Yeah, but
what
if they're not the ideal client? What if they're not fitting to be on the board?
Yeah, well, that gets to be a little bit different. That we have to talk through. Like I said, it hasn't happened yet. I've done a few hundred of these meetings, and we haven't heard that yet. But yeah, we would have to. I'd have to work with the advisor on that conversation.
What about advisors that say, "Well, I send out my annual survey. Isn't that just as good?"
It's different. Quantitative feedback, like a survey, is very valuable, and I recommend it to a lot of people. Qualitative feedback is different, and I think both components are important in a good client feedback program. You know, one of the things is with a survey, there are limitations to the instrument. Like how often have you answered a survey and they say, well, you know, how would you rate this on a scale of 1 to 5? And, you know, you might say, well, it's not really a 3, but it's not really a 4. But how often do you ask yourself, well, that's not really the right question? You know, I do lots of those, you know, when I when I get a survey like that from a vendor, you know, frequently I'll go through and answer the questions, but I'm frequently left with the thought that, you know, what I really wanted to tell them was, and it wasn't on the survey. That stuff can come up when you're having a conversation. That's why qualitative feedback has a role.
Okay, so I'm going to wrap here, Steve, but thanks for all your insight on this. What is something that I didn't ask you about that you think we should include in this podcast?
Well, it's a good question. how do you broaden the benefits of an advisory board to the people who are not on the board? So how do you get benefits? You know, how does your whole business get benefits beyond the 12 people that are sitting right in front of you? And the answer to that is you take the information that you get and the actions that you subsequently take based on that feedback, and you publicize them through your communications program. By doing that and giving the advisory board credit, you can get feedback from those 12 clients, but you can spread the benefit over all of your clients.
So like in my newsletter, if I'm an advisor that did this, I should say like, hey, in our last client advisory board, we found out that you all hate our annual review meetings. And that's what the 12 people on the advisory board said. So now we're making them 3 hours longer. Thanks, advisory board. You can all thank the advisory board.
Yeah, well, I mean, if everybody on the advisory board says, you know what would be better is if you locked us in a room all day long and didn't give us anything but bread and water, that to us would be the ideal review meeting. Well, if that's what your best clients are telling you, you might want to consider it. Of course, they don't tell you that kind of thing. But and they also don't say we hate the review meeting. But what they might say is, we don't understand this report, or here's feedback I get all the time. What could we do to make our review meetings better? Less about the portfolio, more about our issues. So what you do is you go out to your client newsletter and you say, hey, we got our advisory board together. And guess what we found? We found that most of the people on that board would like a little bit fewer statistics in the meeting and a little bit more talking about their needs and goals. And so next time you come in for a review meeting, you're going to see some changes. That's the way you get the benefit from the board.
Okay, Steve, we're going to wrap here. How can people reach you?
They can go to clientdrivenpractice.com.
Everybody, thanks for listening. Please rate, subscribe, and review this podcast.